Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
I made the decision was best for me, and I just felt like Arkansas was the best thing for me. So,
any message you want to send to those fans out there in Arkansas?
Hey, I'm coming. Woo Pig Suey. Let's get it. You know what we all about. We're going to get it. Let's get it.
At the top of our open, you heard Jalen Catalon talking about his excitement at the time when he was at Mansfield Legacy to get to the University of Arkansas. And that excitement has been passed on to Razorback fans by his play. I was talking with a few Morning Rush listeners about this yesterday. Is Jalen Catalon the best Razorback player since Darren McFadden? That's a conversation we'll dive into. You got a bunch of news coming out of Knoxville, Tennessee with Jeremy Pruitt from Chris Lowe of ESPN, Adam Rindberg, Mark Schlabaugh. We'll get into that as well. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, has COVID, won't be able to coach this weekend. First playoff appearance for the Browns since 2002. How are Baker and his teammates responding to that? Grant Morgan, once again, gets an accolade from another outlet. Really excited to see Grant continuously do that. I want to talk about SEC jobs this morning. Where does Arkansas rank in the pecking order? Where's Tennessee? Where's South Carolina? There's been a lot of debate about that lately. Talk about that. Georgia tomorrow. Hopefully the Arkansas basketball team can get back on track. And Tommy, I'm quite happy today because Morgan Wallen released his double album last night, so I've been listening to that all morning, and it's just a beautiful, I say it's our last football Friday, considering college football playoff is on Monday, and kind of shifting our attention to Razorback basketball.
Yeah, and we still got a month, though, or I guess a month from yesterday. Super Bowl's February 7th, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I looked that up yesterday, and I think that's the number on the calendar for the Super Bowl. So February 7th. So we still got a month of football, and we clutch on to that. So, I mean, obviously the vast majority of that, all with the exception of one game on Monday night, is NFL football and the playoffs that begin tomorrow. So enjoy it while it lasts, I guess. We got just a handful of games left, and football is over for a while.
We'll talk about the NFL playoffs coming up as well. Where do you want to start this morning?
Probably not where you want to be. I think the most interesting thing of all the things you just listed, as much as you'd like to talk about Morgan Wallen's new double album, I think the most interesting thing, guys, is Kevin Stefanski missing a playoff game. I mean, that's probably not what most people would pick, but when you think about the things that are interesting from this list of stuff, a head coach for a team that never makes the playoffs. I mean, does this seem like an Arkansas thing right here? I mean, this would be what would happen if Arkansas finally made a college football playoff, like either the quarterback, the head coach, a coordinator, your starting middle linebacker. You know, you're talking about Catalon, your safety that means everything. Something like this would happen. Here, this is what it feels like if you're a Browns fan to be a Razorback. I mean, I can empathize a little bit with what they're going through. I don't know what a head coach is worth. I don't know what Kevin Stefanski is worth to them, but no one wants to go to a playoff game, and I don't know what odds they have of winning. And I certainly don't think that if they won this weekend, they're going to advance, you know, into a championship game or the Super Bowl.
Plus 5,000 is what they're listed via DraftKings.
All right, thank you. But this is interesting to me, and it's just part of the COVID year we're living in. But a head coach is missing a game. It's unreal.
It's a bummer.
But it's not, not surprising. It's not something that's knocking us out of our chair. But when you just stop and think about what's happening here, this is pretty noteworthy.
It sure made Phil a happy camper yesterday.
Well,
being the Steelers fan he is.
Well, if it's,
you know, this was obviously Belichick hadn't coached his team, but if this was the Patriots in the heyday, they would reschedule the game, wouldn't they? You know, Kevin Stefanski, we're going to roll on, you know.
Yeah. So here was Baker Mayfield yesterday when being asked about this question. Hey, how are you guys going to respond without your head football coach?
Just adapt and play. I mean, it's win or go home. So it's whoever we have out there,
we're counting on them, and we believe in those people that are out there. So, you know, we're still having to adjust and adapt, but just like last week, it's hitting the curveball and adjusting each day.
Now, you really hope that they perform against the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got to remember, just go back to last week in Cleveland in the dog pound. They had to beat Mason Rudolph and the Steelers to make the playoffs. They were able to do that. But Big Ben Roethlisberger, the wily veteran who hasn't had his best year, who the Pittsburgh Steelers have kind of reeled as of late, that's a much different competition level, Big Ben at home. Now, Heinz Field is a much more of a deterring place when they have full capacity. We know about the terrible towel. We know about the crowd impact in that stadium. It's not going to be there, fellas. So at least the Browns can look past that. But this is still going to be a really tough game for Cleveland to get by. Kevin Stefanski, Tommy, you asked the question, hey, how much is this guy worth? Well, I'll tell you much. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2002. Yeah.
So he's got him there.
He's obviously worth something. And there was a lot of bickering between Freddie Kitchens and the offense and really just the whole football team last year. Stefanski has come in, really just kind of been, and they lost, I mean, they lost Odell Beckham in the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And they've managed to persevere and get through. That's one of their best playmakers. Give credit to Stefanski, that defense, Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. I mean, they've gotten to this point. Now you got an opportunity against a division rival to keep it going.
For what it's worth, Browns-Steelers are Sunday night, 7:15 our time. So you find this news out yesterday. You at least have the benefit of not playing Saturday and not even playing early Sunday. You've got every minute, every hour of advantage you can if you're the Browns to have every last meeting, to have every last ability to organize for Kevin Stefanski to meet remotely. At least you're not trying to cram all of that preparation in for a, you know, a noon start on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you have that benefit that of the six games, you go last.
Yeah, and I heard this on a Dan Patrick clip I saw yesterday. They asked the NFL about Stefanski and his ability to coach. Stefanski can be in communication with his staff and the football team until they leave for kickoff, is what I was told. What I saw. So, like college football, like the debate, oh, if Nick Saban couldn't coach, would he be texting Sark and company at halftime or in the quarter or whatever? They're not supposed to communicate. But you and I both know there's going to be some level of communication on a burner phone or something between Kevin Stefanski and his staff.
The difference is, in college football, they can't take draft picks. They really, they're probably not going to come in and fine you. They're not going to. In the NFL, they have an investigative staff. They have a. So you may be right. They may test that. But the consequences in the NFL would be far more severe if you broke those rules than they ever would be in college football. They're not going to do anything in college football, more likely. They'll take your draft picks. They'll fine you money, or they'll do both.
Because if I remember correctly, guys, the Las Vegas Raiders, and this was not because they're it was because they're breaking rules. It wasn't because Gruden wasn't wearing a mask. They got fined and they lost a draft pick earlier this year. Or am I making that up?
No, you're remembering correctly.
I think that I'm remembering that right. I couldn't tell you which one it was, but I know it was like a severe punishment. And that kind of sent a memo to not only the players, but the coaches and the executive teams across the NFL landscape. It is a much more league that is punishable coming down from Roger Goodell and his constituents. So fun game of wild card games this weekend. We will discuss those later. What you think about that anytime you want to bring in this morning, it's 877-377-6960.
Hey, real quick before we go, is that a rule or a position that college and or the NFL should relook at in the offseason, that if a coach is out, particularly during COVID, if it's stretched into next year, that you could be in communication remotely with maybe the coaches in your booth? Is that a policy that if you're out at no fault of your own because of COVID?
I think they're just worried about the muddied advantage that you have at that. What they're concerned with.
Advantage would you gain? Maybe there's greater analytics than we're aware of you would have at your fingertips.
You think about
I'm trying to put my head around what real advantage would you have gained that you don't already have at your fingertips?
I'm just telling you what the NFL has said when it comes to that. 877-377-6963. Hey, what's going on in Knoxville?
Somebody said we've got SEC bias. Deal with it. They're the best.
In the SEC, it just means more.
I know one thing. The SEC just got a little tougher.
This is your SEC update on the Morning Rush.
South Carolina and Ole Miss, their men's basketball program, have been suspended for the game tomorrow. Stuff going on within the South Carolina basketball program dealing with COVID. So that game will be postponed to this point, not happening tomorrow. Brian Harsin announced yesterday for the Auburn Tigers football team that Derek Mason and Mike Bobo will be his coordinators. Derek Mason, the former head coach at Vanderbilt, and then Mike Bobo was at Georgia. Then this past season at South Carolina, he is heading off to Auburn. Clay, your thoughts on Brian Harsin's first two big hires? And he also brought over Will Friend from the Gamecocks as well, who's the offensive line coach.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for both of those coaches and really both of those men. And they're both really high character. Derek Mason, everyone knew that he was a great defensive coach at Vanderbilt, and they never really figured it out on offense. But you knew that what you were going to get game to game with their defensive play. And they were in a lot of games and didn't close them out. In his time at Vanderbilt, just didn't have enough talent, enough horses. And, you know, Mike Bobo, you can go back through time and, you know, his I think he had some kind of illness problem it when he was head coach at Colorado State, and he missed a lot of games.
Something with his foot, Clay? Is that what I'm thinking of?
It was an illness some type.
Yeah.
And but he's considered to be high character and a good offensive coach, and I think he had bad luck with quarterbacks being injured at Colorado State. And I've got a buddy out at Fort Collins. It would kind of give me the rundown blow by blow with what was going on with Bobo. But I think that Brian Harsin just hired two really good coordinators and two really good men. So we'll see what happens at Auburn you know, it is really interesting when you see, you know, the head coaches get these type jobs, because you know that they want to be head coaches again. And, you know, we're watching Barry Odom real closely, and, you know, he's going to want to be a head coach. And so how long does Brian Harsin, is he able to keep these guys?
That is a good question. Clay, it's nice to have Barry Odom back for consistency, and we'll talk about that conversation more coming up. But one of the things Sam Pittman did when he first got here was reach out to Barry Odom and ended up bringing him on to campus and getting him the job. And the SEC experience, I think, is going to be a big part for Brian Harsin when he's coached Arkansas State, Boise State, his alma mater, and then maybe one other school.
Texas. He coached at Texas.
Yeah. Off the top of my head. So it's going to be that whole process, what shakes out at Auburn, is going to be a fascinating discussion to watch. And that's not the only one that's really kind of fascinating and compelling right now within the SEC. We're going to have to shift over to the east side of things. Tennessee, it's like a firestorm going on with Knoxville right now, man. ESPN.com's Chris Lowe said it would be difficult for Jeremy Pruitt to keep his job at this point. Mark Schlabaugh is reporting that the new coaching staff hirings have been paused and the current extensions haven't been resolved. So, Clay, I'll relay this to you. In 2021, is Jeremy Pruitt going to be the head football coach of the Tennessee Volunteers?
Boy, I wouldn't put a bet on it. I mean, I would say... No, and there's a lot of things, you know, little subplots going on that Tennessee fans were really upset. Their coaches were asked to, because you're under contract, and the same thing happened at Arkansas. They were asked to take a percentage of a pay cut, just for 1 year, and I think all but one of them declined to do that. And you know, it's just like, that is a bad look when they're laying off people.
Didn't Fulmer get a raise? Am I making that up?
I don't know that. I know the assistant coaches did not take pay cuts at Tennessee, and their fans were up in arms over that. Yeah. When their revenues dropped by $30 million and they asked them to take really a small pay cut – in an era when everyone thinks coaches are overpaid, they declined. You know, everybody thought, you know, that it was a mandatory pay cut at Arkansas. No, it's voluntary. They're under contract. So you have to agree to amend your contract to take a pay cut. And all the Arkansas coaches did. And that's really what happened across the country where, you know, the Power Five schools lost all the revenue. The coaches did take pay cuts voluntarily. Not at Tennessee. Not in a time when they're not winning games. This is a bad look.
And Clay, you bring up the pay cuts, and you'll love this. I'm kind of feeding into your fire. So you remember a couple months ago when Chris DeLaConte put out that bulletin, that news report, the press release, hey, we're going to have to lay some people off. We're having some trouble with the finances and stuff. And then just this past week, they fired Tom Herman, owe his assistants like $24 million, owe him like $14. I mean, if you're a other staffer within that athletics department and you see that happen last week and you got laid off months prior, I mean, that has to just tick you off beyond means, right?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. Right. I agree. That is one way to look at it. The other way is that football has to support the rest of the athletic department. And if they don't think that they can sell tickets next year when there aren't COVID issues, then you have to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand that they have to do that to be able to make the university, the athletic department viable going forward, and so that can support all the Title IX sports. In their revenue at Texas was affected just like everybody else. So if you don't, I mean, it's a business decision. If you keep them, you don't have those buyouts. If you don't, then you've got an empty stadium. And it was a complex issue. You had the alums up in arm because Herman would not require his players to sing the Eyes of Texas. I mean, it was just a you know, you'd say what was going on at Tennessee. They had that at Texas last year too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just about they weren't beating Oklahoma or they weren't beating TCU. It was all the things that were going on within the program. The locker room was split. You know, the you know, players running off the field, not singing, standing with Hook'em while the Eyes of Texas were played. It was crazy down there. So they had some issues that maybe we don't understand on the surface.
Let's get back into this Tennessee conversation, Clay, because two of the most prevalent names that have popped up, and it's not a coaching search at this point, because Jeremy Pruitt has not been officially let go, but two of the names that have continuously popped up that I've seen multiple reports on, ESPN, Bleacher Report, whoever, Gus Malzahn and Hugh Freeze. Clay, in your opinion, if a move is made, if Jeremy Pruitt is let go by the Tennessee Athletic Department, who is the better fit, who is the better hire for the Tennessee Volunteers?
Yeah, see, I don't think it'll be either one of those guys.
Okay.
And I think both of them are and you guys mentioned, you know, the Alabama record for Gus, and just as telling, and the team that you must beat at Tennessee right now is who? Georgia. And Gus's record against Georgia has been really abysmal. That's the team, you know, that, you know, we all focus on, you know, is Auburn, what's Auburn, Alabama, that, but for, you know, for Auburn fans, the Georgia rivalry is real, and it's big time. And
Deep South's always rivalry.
Yeah, and so I think that they will, you know, Gus is going to have a hard time getting a job at Tennessee, I think. And would he be a good hire, and could he do the job? Probably. But, right now I think Gus is really damaged goods. And you know, Hugh Freeze, I'm still a little bit unsure whether he can work in the SEC. And that's – I'm not saying it would be could he win at Tennessee? Probably could. You know, if they're going through NCAA probation issues and they hire Hugh Freeze, what's the message that they just sent to the NCAA? We're not real serious about compliance.
Oh, it's a good point.
It appears you're trying to dig up all the stuff you can of your Phil Fulmer and that administration to find issues on your
bring in
coach,
a bigger cheater.
And then to bring in a coach that was fired for known on and off the field issues to replace a coach you had to find issues for, to not pay him his buyout, to fire him with cause. It's the most bizarre set of circumstances that, at least from the outside appearance looking in, that I've seen, but only in college football would you find something of this nature.
That's what I told you earlier. I mean, it's just a facade to say that they're trying to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt. Because if Jeremy Pruitt was winning and there was NCAA violations going
they
on,
they wouldn't be looking for violations.
Tennessee wouldn't be Tommy. Tennessee would not be self-reporting and self-digging into because they're winning. But
well, they have no confidence in Jeremy Pruitt.
And that's what I was going to bleed into. You brought up something that's excellent, and Clay and Tommy made a great point earlier. Clay, the Tennessee fan base, the members. I don't know if it's everyone within the Tennessee athletic department, but there sure seems to be like some moles. They don't believe in Jeremy Pruitt. None of this happens if Jeremy Pruitt and company win the SEC East, but. There is some people, and there's some people within that athletic department that still think he can get it done. Otherwise, he wouldn't be there. But the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of people that don't think he's the guy, which has led to all of this.
Yeah.
Well, I'd agree with all of that, and it's and I'm probably I've got a lot of friends that are Tennessee fans, and I think that some of that what you just said is exactly right, that they and you know, is Coach Fulmer had enough of the guy that he hired? Probably so.
I'd say that. Clay, I was harassed a little bit yesterday because we're starting a new podcast here at hitthatline.com. It's called Trusting the Process. I'm going to be interviewing a bunch of Arkansas media members, sports media members, big air quotations around media members, because I think it's going to be a very loose term. But a lot of people, especially in the studio, were disappointed that you're weren't my first guest. So I'll ask you publicly on air at about 7:30 this morning. Would you come on the podcast with me at some point in the next couple of months?
Do you think I'm for hire.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
I'm for hire. If the price is right. Yeah.
Are we satisfied, Jenkins?
I just can't believe, Clay, with all that you have done to help Ty's career, got him a scholarship, basically paid for his college, paid for his education.
My merits didn't have anything to do with that.
He starts a new project, and the first guest he asks on is not you. I mean, it's the slap in the face, the level of disrespect is just unbelievable.
It's appalling.
I mean, it'd be like Ty taking up fly fishing and asking someone else to take him for the first time.
Well, I got to be honest with you, Ty. You know, that doesn't really bother me, but I will tell you that now, this is unrelated. I don't want you to think that one thing would lead to another. But I'm really, I'm cutting back on some things that I'm doing. You know, I guess I'm in a health kick, and I'm looking out for things that would provide longevity. I don't want anything that's unhealthy.
Yes.
If it would have to be something that didn't bother, either getting up early or my afternoon nap time or maybe my evening social events. So I don't know if I can work it in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just happy.
But I am for hire.
Okay. I'll make sure that we get you a.
Well, he hadn't told you it doesn't pay much.
Yeah. It's
and by much I mean nothing.
Expense the charge to whatever Clay requires.
Matt Jones has asked me to do some podcasts for them too, and I've given them the same answer. So I have to be consistent. Mm-hmm. So, I guess we'll have to wait and see how this works out.
Okay. Sounds like this is still
the bigger issue is that
I would not have asked on the air. You need to understand things that you do off the air and on the air.
Of course I did something wrong. Of course I did. Okay. All right. Moving on. Clay, we asked this question earlier. Jalen Catalan, I know you've kind of highly regarded like every other Razorback fan listening to this program right now. And I think sometimes it's hard to compare, and I thought Tommy brought up a good point earlier. It's hard to compare offensive players to defensive players. And so initially the question was, does Jalen Catalan have the potential to be the best player in a Razorback uniform since Darren McFadden? And there's been some studs that have come through: Ryan Mallett, Tyler Wilson, Joe Adams, Jarius Wright, Jake Beckett, Tremaine Thomas, and others. So I almost have to pitch it at the same position. Does Jalen Catalon have the potential to be equal to or greater than say, a Ken Hamlin? I don't know if he's ever going to get to that Steve Atwater point, but just kind of your thoughts on his ceiling here at Arkansas, especially getting Barry Odom back another year.
So the best two safeties, and I always put an asterisk here because some people will list Tony Bua as a safety. I always thought he played a lot more games at outside linebacker than he did at safety. Mm-hmm. And the bulk of his tackles were playing kind of that hybrid outside linebacker. And you could argue that's a safety position in the nickel. But, you know, you leave off Kanoy Kennedy as a great safety, and you made a mistake.
Of course, I meant
it. So you have Hamlin, you have Kennedy. Now, I didn't know where Kennedy would be before that. Recruited by Danny Ford's staff, played under Houston Nutt, and then Tony Bua. Those are great safety. Tremaine Thomas, good. Not in the same category as those other guys. And then you listed the right guys. Jairus Wright, really a big time. And, you know, Joe Adams was an All-America as a punt returner. You know, consensus All-America. It was great, great player. And the fact that those two guys played together, the wide receiver, were, you know, really, you know, one played off the other. You know, who do you put your best cover guy on? And whoever, if you put him on Joe Adams, and Jairus Wright's going to go off. That happened one day at AT&T Stadium, where Texas A&M left the middle of the field open because they were doubling on the outside, and Tyler and Jairus just had a field day, and so you were vulnerable to that. But, a guy that I would say, you know, was a great, great player, you know, wasn't All-America, but I would put him in the same category as you know, somebody could change your program, was Alex Collins. And for 3 years, he performed like a freak. And, I mean, in his last game in the Liberty Bowl against Kansas State might have been the greatest game by a running back. When yards were really tough against a good, solid run defense that I've seen. And McFadden did it, but Alex Collins did too. And really was a lot of fun to be around and to cover. Catalon, and then I would also throw in Frank Ragnow as a four-year player, three-year starter, first-team All-America, first-round draft pick. I would put him in as, you know, is a great, great player that, you know, Catalon would be similar as. You know, is Catalon going to be a first-round draft pick? Maybe. He can play cornerback. He can play safety. Now, I'm on the Football Writers All-America Committee, and I nominated him for first-team All-America because I think he's that kind of a player. And I've never done that for, you know, a redshirt freshman player. You didn't do that when McFadden was a freshman. You know, you didn't see enough of him that year to say he's a first-team All-America. He was, you know, consensus and unanimous All-America these next 2 years. I think that you're going to see that from Catalon, you know, next year, if he stays healthy. He made 99 tackles in 9 games. That is a lot of tackles for a safety. And when I say 9 games, he missed a half of 2 different games because of targeting.
Yeah.
So really almost a full game because there was one game where it was the start of a quarter. So it's, I've thought since the time he was signed and wrote about him way before he became a great player on the field of what I thought. And this time last year I was interviewing Barry Odom, and it was clear that he thought he was going to be a difference maker. Would not say that, but just the conversation, the way it went, I knew what he thought of Catalon, and it's turned out to be true.
Evan Fayville texting, he says, I guess Hunter Henry with a consensus All-American season and the Mackey Award-winning season is just chopped liver. Yeah, we probably
no, and we're talking about a senior versus a freshman.
Yeah, I think, I think
you're asking me about what he can be. And Hunter, you know, was pretty pretty much a four-year starter. Mm-hmm. No, a three-year starter because he didn't come back for his senior year. But no, I don't think that's, you know, and I look through the list of All-Americans and yeah. you can say that. You know, it was interesting. The football writers did not pick a tight end that year. Hunter was a junior and won first team on all the other teams. So that kept him from being a unanimous pick. And that's the only reason, because if they had, he would have been the pick. I wasn't on the committee then. That was actually my motivation for throwing up my hands at the football writers. And I made such a strong case, they put me on the committee.
Different side of the ball, but a guy that played as a freshman, just talking about ceilings and young players. But Alex Collins is not a name we brought up, but a guy that contributed and three-year starter. And, you know, we got about 30 seconds here, Clay. But, you know, there's another guy. And then you look at where he's at statistically, he's got to be a guy in this
conversation. Well, that's who I just mentioned. I don't know where you were,
I walked out of the room. Anyway.
That was the very first guy brought up. We're on the same page, okay, Tommy.
We're having some technical difficulties. He was working on stuff. He's definitely one. There's a bunch
of... Sorry, Tommy.
I'm sorry. I was trying to get you heard on another station.
No big deal. Yeah, it's not a big deal at all. But yeah, he's definitely one that I didn't have on the list initially, but definitely needs to be added to this conversation.
You should bring him up next time, Clay. You definitely should get him on your list.
I want to tell you about the new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers. They come in spicy pineapple, cucumber lime, and peach pear. They're light and refreshing and are made with zero sugar. The new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers.
Boy, Houdini's in the house wearing number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown!
Blake, it's been a while, buddy. It's good to catch up. Kind of want to start with what we got going on in the SEC. We had Coach Zimmerman on our stations yesterday, who is the color broadcaster for Razorback men's basketball, and he said this could be a year where the SEC champion is 14-4, 13-5. Is there a definitive leader right now in the clubhouse for who's going to win the SEC in basketball this year?
Well, Ty, I think despite the fact that they lost to, one of the three teams, I guess, still that have been unbeaten, even though South Carolina's only played a game, but I still think Tennessee's the best team. From top to bottom, I just don't think there's another team that's going to be able to beat them. You know, if we just did it, let's say, a tournament setting and compare it all 14 of these teams, I think Tennessee's still the best team. I just think their defense is on another level, which, Arkansas probably has a little idea of that in terms of that game they had earlier in the week. But I look at this team, that they've got some work to do on offense for sure, but I just think their defense and just the depth that they have and all the different guys they go to, I still think Tennessee's the best team.
Arkansas's got a matchup against the Georgia Bulldogs tomorrow, a team like the Razorbacks coming off two straight losses. Tom Crean has some talent there, but there are some question marks, just like there are with the Razorbacks right now without Justin Smith. Kind of paint the picture what Arkansas fans should expect from a visiting Georgia Bulldogs team tomorrow, Blake.
Yeah, I think records can be deceiving, and I think for Georgia, they're 7-2, but when you look at maybe some of the games they had in the non-conference portion, I mean, they did have a win against Cincinnati, but I think as we've seen, from Cincinnati, this is sort of a different sort of Cincinnati team. I mean, they're 3-6 right now. Beyond that, you can look at the game they had against LSU, and that was a really good game. I mean, certainly one of the better games we've seen to this point in the SEC. They're going to play fast, but at the same time, they're just a team there's really two of the things that with Georgia has been one of the problems since Tom Crean's gotten there, and that's the fact that they don't really take care of the ball great, and they just cannot shoot from outside. And those have been the two things, I think, that have sort of held them back in recent years, and they're still having issues with it. So I think that's the big thing, for Arkansas, is when you look at a matchup like that where you have an Arkansas team that, when you kind of compare it to what they're able to do and some of the things that Georgia kind of struggles with, I think that's where Arkansas is going to have an advantage because, look, this Georgia team, again, they may have 7 wins at this point, but we have to remember, too, this is a team without Anthony Edwards who winds up being the number one pick in the NBA draft, and I just don't think that they may win some games along the way. As we said, I mean, they really play tough against LSU, but I just look at this team and see it as one of those that probably has a pretty good chance of finishing in that bottom four. even if they are pretty competitive throughout the year.
With the reduction of the crowds this year because of COVID, how big a bonus is it winning on the road, and how big a requirement is it to absolutely hold serve at home this year? The home court edge isn't what it was, obviously. What are you seeing so far through the small sample of games we've had in conference play?
I think it's making the results a lot more unpredictable because, you know, normally we would look at it and see a team go on the road as, you know, maybe a team that's ranked high and goes on the road to play a team that's unranked or something like that. And you feel pretty good about their chances, even though, you know, you would add in the atmosphere and all those different things. But now it's like, I don't know, like it just feels like a much different situation. I think that's why we've seen some of these, you know, somewhat interesting results, I think, in the SEC to this point, you know, where you have a team like Alabama, who's able to go on the road and beat a team like Tennessee. And that's not to knock Alabama's talent, because I think right now Alabama's easily, for me, a top three team in the league. But I just think you're going to have a lot of games like that this year where you're going to see it, and you just normally it's like so ingrained in our heads to where when we look at a matchup, it's like, okay, well, let's look at the home team. Like, what are the advantages they're going to have with the crowd and the atmosphere? And we can't put that into play this year. And so I think it comes down to talent. And what is the depth? You know, what are some of the playmakers you have? And those are the teams that, you know, we always say the talented teams are going to be at the top. But, you know, some of those atmosphere situations and different things can come into play to where it can kind of, you know, negate that talent difference. With this year, I just think the teams that are very talented are going to wind up being, you know, right there at the top. And it's just, it makes it much harder to predict. The SEC is always unpredictable, but I think this year has been as hard as any.
A lot of people have already written Kentucky off as a team that won't be a factor at the top. Is that too early? Where do you see Kentucky stacking up in this league come tournament time?
I just don't think Kentucky's – they're just not to that level that obviously we're used to. And you could look at the record and determine that in and of itself. But at the same time, I think if you just watch them play, it's so much different with this team, and I don't know that it's necessarily their fault, because, you know, we go back to always talking about in the off season, you know, that time they spend together in the off season for a team like Kentucky that just completely turns over the roster, and more so this year. I mean, they turn the roster over a lot more this year than we're used to. And so when you add all these different guys and they don't have that chance in the off season to kind of build that chemistry and do all these different things, plus I just never looked at this class, and don't get me wrong, like this is still, there's a reason why the class was ranked as high as they were. There's a lot of talented freshmen on the floor. But if you compare this class, you know, to that class several years ago, let's say a Malik Bonk and De'Aaron Fox and Bam Adebayo, I don't think that they're equal in terms of, you know, having those guys on offense necessarily that are at that point in their game to where you're so confident that they're going to be able to take over a game at any moment's notice. Now, they've got some guys on there that can play, but I just don't think this group is there yet. And we always say that about Kentucky in the non-con is, hey, it's going to take them a while to get going. January, February, they'll get things ramped up. Even with these two wins to start SEC play, I mean, they beat Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, who, again, I think these are two teams that will probably finish in the bottom 4-2, and they struggled to beat both of them. So they've really got to get better on offense. They've got to shoot the ball better. If they don't do that, their defense will keep them in games. They'll probably play a lot of these ugly, sort of grinded out type games. But unless their offense comes along, Kentucky's going to have to win a lot of games in the SEC to get into the NCAA tournament, just because they're non-conference. They have nothing to prove. I mean, they have nothing to show. So I think that's something that's really going to be fascinating to watch the rest of the year. They're going to have to make the most of these games, and they certainly need to do it in these next two when they play Florida and Alabama.
Blake Lovell with this Blue Ribbon Report here on the Morning Rush. Blake, staying on the note of Kentucky, BJ Boston got booed at home the other night, so fans are restless. I know Cal's frustrated. Does this team have the potential to be worse than that team in 2014 that lost to, or it might have been 2013, that lost to Robert Morris in the NIT?
Well, I mean, I think the difference really is, you know, that team still, I think, offensively had some bright spots. And I just think this team has just struggled to the point where, you know, I mean, you know, Ty, it's like this is kind of an era where even if you're a bad team, like, we want you to be bad and score 85 points. Like, we don't want you to be bad and be struggling to hit 70 or 65. You know, if you're going to be bad, at least make it entertaining. And I just think this Kentucky team, like, they haven't made it entertaining. And I think that's what they're so used to is you know, fans are so used to seeing these one and done type guys come in and just be so flashy and just be able to put up points, you know, in a hurry. And this is just a team that has not gotten there yet. So it is completely unlike anything they've seen. I think if you're a Kentucky fan, even that team, I want to say whatever it was, 2013 or whatever, like they were still pretty good on offense and they still had some things they could do pretty well. I mean, they would put up points, but this team just has not been able to put up points consistently. And that's what it said. I mean, their defense is going to have to continue to play at the level that they're playing at, because if they have a slip on defense, I mean, they're really going to struggle. And so I'm very curious to see maybe what adjustments they make. You know, having someone like Dante Allen be able to kind of have a breakout game like there's so many different aspects of this team you still have no idea about. And maybe this is one that maybe starts to find their groove in early February. But I think by now we're so used to seeing them get there. But just the unique circumstances of this season, they're just not there for sure.
Blake, let's bring the conversation back to home. Arkansas Razorbacks, I know they're coming off two straight losses, but there have been some bright points this season, especially opening the SEC play with a road win against the Auburn Tigers. Just kind of your early impressions of this Arkansas basketball team and what Muss is doing in year number two.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team, again, we talk about talent. There's no denying the talent, I think, on this roster. I mean, you just look at the numbers. Their balance is something that I think I always like to see teams like that, because, you know, as you guys know, if you have a guy who's maybe off, you know, here or there, if you have a star player and something, you know, and you only have one or two of those, it makes it much tougher. But I think they've got some balance. They've got guys they feel like they can go to in a lot of these different situations. And so I think that really helps them. And, you know, that's going to be something I think is going to be really important, because, you know, whereas you look at some of these other teams, like we said, you feel like maybe they only have one or two guys that on every given night they have to be able to produce. I think if you're Arkansas, you know, you can afford to have a couple of these guys maybe don't have their best games, because you've got others that have proven they can step up and, you know, take that production on. So they're going to be right there. I mean, I've people, you know, they're already start asking about, you know, what do you see with the SEC in terms of the projecting NCAA tournament teams? I mean, even with Arkansas sitting there at 1-2 in the league, I still think they're a tournament team. I put them pretty much in my, I don't want to say guaranteed, because you never say that, but
yeah.
I think they're going to be there. And I just look at them and see some of the things, like we said, if you compare them, you know, to a Kentucky or some of these other teams, they've got comparable talent. They've got comparable depth. And I think when you bring that, you know, full force, I think their team's going to be hard to beat. And like you said, I mean, look, you know, losing to Missouri and Tennessee, I don't think is anything to really be all that upset about. I know the one at home against Missouri is a little bit different, because they really didn't play well there. But, you know, Tennessee, they had their opportunities. But like I said, I think Tennessee's the best team in the league. So I don't think it's anything to be upset about, to only to lose that game the way they did. But they've just got to beat the teams they should beat. I think that's what it comes down to, because they're going to beat some of these teams along the way, you know, whether it is an LSU, a Bama, you know, teams like that. I think they're going to be able to win some of those games, but they also need to avoid losing some of those games to teams that they shouldn't, you know, like a Vanderbilt or a Mississippi State or an A&M, teams like that. And so this team's really good, and I'm very interested to see kind of how they adjust to these back-to-back losses when they play Georgia on Saturday.
Blake Lovell, you can read his stuff on Blue Ribbon Yearbook as well as the Blue Ribbon Report. Blake, it's always good to catch up, man, and hopefully we'll continue to have some great SEC basketball games to watch this season.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks as always.
Now, when it comes to SEC basketball, Blake is one of the best. You can follow him on Twitter at the Blake Lovell.
All right, we'll get Clay's reaction to some of Blake's thoughts in just a moment. I want to tell you about the Catfish Kitchen. They're back open here in 2021, ready to go for a new year. They've changed some things up. Now serving family style, all you can eat catfish, chicken tenders, fried shrimp, fries, and all the fixings. So you can go in for all your favorites. It's just $22.95. So if you want a little bit of everything, they're going to bring it family style to the table. You can add crab legs to that for just $20 more. So you can head on in to the Catfish Kitchen in Van Buren. Now, they still have the 2- and 4-piece dinners available. So if you want to go in and really enjoy everything the Catfish Kitchen has, they'll bring you all the catfish, chicken tenders, and fried shrimp that you and your family want to enjoy. So stop in and see them. They're going to be open Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Thursday through Saturday, 11 till 8. Sundays, 11 till 3. So make it part of your weekend schedule at the Catfish Kitchen. They're at the top of Logtown Hill, right across from the police station in Van Buren. So if you're looking for a great all-you-can-eat catfish, chicken, and fried shrimp place, they've got it in Van Buren at the Catfish Kitchen. Again, top of Logtown Hill, right across from the police station in Van Buren.
I think a lot of Razorback fans are taking in delight in Kentucky struggles. Now, I will say, I think to open up their SEC play, they're either 2-0 or 2-1, and they've won two straight games, so they might be...
Beat Vanderbilt the night before last. Yeah,
and Mississippi State in double OT, and I think Vanderbilt by three, so they've gone back on track a little bit. But, Clay, this is kind of... I mean, it really is a wide-open SEC league right now. I mean, with Tennessee losing at home to Alabama, and you mentioned how good Nate Oates' squad has looked when you've gotten a chance to watch him this season. I don't know how wide open it is for Arkansas, but I mean, this is a team when Justin Smith returns that I don't know what percentage you put on it, but this is a team that legitimately can contend for an SEC regular season championship, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's going to be interesting to watch Alabama over the next three games. They play at Auburn tomorrow, then they play at Kentucky Tuesday, then they come then they play Arkansas. So it's at home. So they've got a chance to really put some distance between some other teams. I think it'll be Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas before it's all over, those three teams. I thought Florida, but I have not been impressed with Florida. I thought Florida would have a good team, but they have not performed well this year. And it just, something's out of sync there, and they've had some, you know, obviously some heartbreak on the floor. You know, one of their best players went down. He's doesn't look like he'll return. You're right in that it is whenever you see Kentucky is down, well, then that means it's a wide open SEC race. Yep. Because it's excellent been theirs point. It's been theirs without, I mean, almost consensus to before the season, you'd pick them. Mm-hmm. And I think people did this year, but something's off, and they cannot score, and they do not have what I would call go-to shooters, and you know, they don't have a proven low block player, which is what they've had for forever and ever. They may develop into that, but they haven't at this point.
This would be the equivalent of Alabama losing three in the regular season in football. What we're seeing with Kentucky.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, good, I think so. You're
like
right.
Losing their opening, like Alabama losing that opening showcase game to whoever
glorious.
They played. And then
Southern Miss and Western Kentucky beating them.
Well, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing. I mean, there's at least a one-year shift. I don't think Kentucky's going away by any means, but it just opens the door and gives everybody some hope. But you've still got a really good team in Tennessee to navigate around.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So we're about 2 hours and 20 minutes into this program. We've yet to really have any controversy, so I want to stir the pot a little bit.
Here we go.
Former Razorback, Alandis Harris, had this to say. Now, you got to remember, Mike Anderson's his guy. It was his coach. And he said, someone said to me that Mike Anderson would have been 12-0 with this team. What do you guys think? Honest thoughts. I'll drop my thoughts. I think this team would be 11-1 with for sure beating Tennessee and winning the next game, which he's talking about Georgia, and be ranked Monday morning. Any thoughts on Alandis's opinion?
Well, I'd like to ask Alandis, what coaching decision did you disagree with or think Mike would have made different in the Tennessee game that would have changed the outcome? Where did Musselman misstep, in your opinion? I'd like to hear Alandis's thoughts on that.
I'd also like to point out that Jalen Williams, Devontae Davis, Moses Moody would not be on campus if Mike Anderson was still the head coach. Devontae was committed to Oklahoma State.
Right.
Jalen was leaning towards that, I believe. Moses was not coming.
But forget everything you're saying is correct, but just imagine they were and you parachuted Mike Anderson in for the game. But what decisions did Musselman make that Alandis disagree? That's what I would like.
I think it's just more of that's his guy and that's his coach. But as soon as I say that, of course, I get exactly what I want response from our listeners. We've got a call or two here that we'll get to. But I just found, I when I read that, I just found that interesting. Clay, what is your take on Alandis's opinion when it comes to Mus and Mike?
Well, I think it's typical what Tommy just said. I mean, in what you would say, that's his guy. I mean, that was his coach. And he transferred in to play for him. And, you know, what the first thing you would have to say is, well, what would his roster be like? What would Mike have right now? Who would he be playing with? Would he be playing with Connor Vanover? No, he had a chance at Connor on the front end in past. And what would be my other take would be, would Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe decided to stay? Because that would be the only thing that I could see that, you know, would Mike have talked them out of, you know, going to the NBA, and would they be playing right now? That's the only thing that I could say is his roster would be different, and what would it be? You know, there's two different styles of coaching. I like them both. You know, Mike had some success, but ultimately he was fired. Now, if Alandis wants to say they shouldn't have fired him, I get that. That's his guy. But you can't say what he would do with Eric Musselman's roster because he wouldn't have it.
Yep, and that's what a lot of people pointed to, and that's what I initially thought when I heard just this question posed by Alandis last night. But I just wanted to bring that up, and we've gotten a lot of text in here. We've got a bunch of text in here already. Got Clay's opinion, got Tommy's opinion, yeah, and got my opinion as well.
Hogwash, that's what it is.
Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.